In our previous lesson, we refined our definition of the center and clarified that in human spirit work, most of the time, we're talking about our personal magical center. My magical center is the place or places where my conscious presence influences the intersection of my manifest self and my unmanifest self. So, what's the secret in the center? The secret is that the center has a center, which I call the void. And I'll warn you all right now, it is disturbingly peaceful in there. Picture a hurricane. The whole storm is like what we've been calling a center, an intersection of manifest and unmanifest change and identity. The void is the eye of the hurricane, the center within the center. Calm, quiet, and still. The word void comes from Latin, vacare, meaning to be empty. There's many reasons a spirit worker should be interested in the void, but for this lesson, let's go with the top three. First, the void is the cauldron of potential. Second, the void is the gateway of fire. And third, as I already said, it is disturbingly peaceful. So let's look at each of these three reasons in more depth. The void is the cauldron of potential. What does that mean? Let's start with the cauldron part. I call the void a cauldron because a cauldron sits on the fire for cooking, just as our void sits in the blaze at our center. Another reason I call the void a cauldron is because in traditional witchcraft, the night sky is sometimes imagined as an overturned cauldron, the iron mound, and we're looking up into the belly of it. And yes, there's stars, but there's also space. So much emptiness. When entering the void in your center, I invite you to imagine the transcendent sense of scale that you might feel gazing up at a clear night sky. The eye of a hurricane, after all, can be 40 miles wide. I'll also call the void a cauldron because cauldrons and voids are both spaces in which magic can be brewed, in which strange new spirit can be created. Recall from our lessons on bringing forth life in Phase 5, the four roles of creation: conceiver, catalyst, contributor, and creator. As the conceiver, we hold the unborn spirit in our womb, in our mind, in our heart, in some kind of space or vessel within our spirit. The void is a space inside our magical center. It is the nothing from which wholly new something can arise. Most of the time when we create, we don't utilize the void. We use some kind of space, but we don't use that space. We don't create things that are wholly new. We create things that are mostly new, or that are new to us, or that are a new combination of old things. Why is the void capable of conceiving these wholly novel spirits? Recall that we must eat of any realm in which we wish to be enfleshed. The void eats nothing, so it is of no realm. And recall that a realm is defined as a place with shared rules. So if the void is of no realm, the void has no rules, no limits. That lack of rules is where the potential part comes into the cauldron of potential title. The void is a place in which anything can be conceived because the void has limitless potential. So you might be thinking, well, sweet witch's titties, I can go into my center, catalyze the void, and manifest anything. No rules. It's a little more complicated than that. The void is the eye of the storm. For what's conceived there to be created, it must be born out of the eye, through the storm, and into a realm which will have rules. And it's a little more complicated still, because what is born from the void can change some of the rules. Specifically, it can change the rules of the inner realm of the spirit that created it. If you're wondering what the rules of your inner realm are, consider applying what we learned in Phase 5 about finding our purpose. If purpose is the thing we put forth, then can we play with the idea of it being something that flows out from us, not something we strive towards? As you start to identify through high contrast consciousness what your spirit is putting forth and what it's holding back, you can consider that this may be a reflection of your rules. What do I allow myself to share and express? What do I always hold back? What inside of me do I force to conform to certain expectations or requirements before I express it? Notice which of your rules seem healthy and which seem like How does this prove that I'm not good enough, that I'm not capable, that I'm a fraud? So for instance, if one of my rules is that whatever I create should prove that I'm a fraud, and I write a book that I haven't conceived in the void, while that book may be a wonderful story, it might be very successful, it might make me rich and change my life, it'll still have to prove that I'm a fraud, and creating it won't have changed my inner life much, won't have influenced my self-loathing rule. I mean, there may be some ripples from this act of creation that create subtle change, but the rules of my inner realm won't be radically altered. The mark of the void is this. If I write a book that originated in my void, creating it will completely change my inner life. It will coincide with a personal paradigm shift, a rebirth. It's possible the book's extraordinary power will stop there. It completely changes my inner life. I put the story forth into the world, and it doesn't change the world so much. I mean, maybe it touches some folks, maybe it doesn't, but it certainly doesn't change the rules of the world. It doesn't mark a greater paradigm shift in human society or anything like that. But every now and then, books do change the rules of the world, books and other kinds of creations and expressions. Why is that? Well, we've been focused on our void as the conceiver, the space, but who's the daddy? Gender neutral. Who is the catalyst? So there's two possible answers, both divine. First, the catalyst can be our own divine self, the union of my great wholeness, my divine self, and my great emptiness, my divine void, would yield a divine child, a new divine spirit greater than the sum of its parents. If this child is born from my magical center into my inner realm, we're talking about is a new divine self emerging, my divine self reborn. My new divine self would not have to conform to the rules of my previous self because it would be born through the soul key of blood, the temporary union of soul and spirit, in which all of my identities become change, and change becomes my identity. At that moment, all of my old rules are mutable, changeable. Of course, not all new divine selves express themselves as books, but we are all always putting something forth. And it's whatever we're putting forth during those moments, minutes, or months of transformation as the new divine self fully emerges that will bear the mark of the void. So what's the second possibility for a divine catalyst? It's God, or a God. God is gender neutral here as well. Some divine spirit greater than myself. And that spirit too could create a spark in the center of my center that would initiate my rebirth and trigger my transformation. In some spiritual cosmologies, this can be rather literal. A free-thinking divine spirit chooses a mortal, touches their life right in the void, and that mortal is changed in some fundamental way. A new divine self emerges. Maybe they become a healer, they have some new artistic gift, they're charged with becoming the traditional spirit worker for their people. Why must one be literally struck by lightning to become a Yatiri healer in the tribes of the Andes Mountains? Catalyzed much? In a less literal sense, we can consider what experiences in life might put us at our very core in contact with greater divinity. A brush with death or birth, opening to a profound grief or joy, or an experience of the heights. Sometimes the same transcendence by which we grasp the blade opens us to the blood, and rather than a god touching us, it's more like we, for a moment, touch God. To clarify, why can only my divine self or a greater divinity make contact with my void? We must be in a state of wholeness to access our void. We must be grasping the blade because the void is an edge. It's part of our edge. This is why the heights are associated not only with inspiration and ideas, but with divine inspiration and holy vision. Because as soon as we stretch from bottom to top and grasp the blade and embrace ourselves from edge to edge, we have embraced our void as well. You might have been picturing the blade, our edge, as something like a skin that surrounds us, an exterior, outermost surface by which we can touch and be touched. But in truth, there's a secret in our magical center. There's an edge in the center, an innermost surface which too is a point of contact with the outer realm. This talk of touching God brings us to the second of the three reasons for entering the void. The void is the gateway of fire. So instead of picturing the void as the vast eye of the storm, picture it as a hidden doorway inside the blaze. The void is a means by which we can access a few of the strangest and most potent outer realms that we'll be working with. The abyss, the chaos, and the continuum, which leads to the center of all. So the abyss is the common ground shared by all spirits and only spirits. The abyss is a realm without soul. It's a pure realm. We'll be learning to enter the abyss later in this phase. It's a trip. The chaos is the common ground shared by all soul and only soul. All power for change exists within the chaos. It's also a pure realm. We'll be learning how to avoid the chaos later in this phase. It is not a place humans should go. Such a bad idea. Although it can sometimes be tapped into, but mostly we avoid it. Avoid. The continuum is the common ground shared by all centers. We usually engage with it by following our own path of emergence. My parents manifested me, their ancestors manifested them, humanity manifested the ancestors, the earth manifested humanity, and so on out into the center of all things. In this context, a nice shorthand for the divine spirit of all is simply to call it the Creator. The Creator is all creation personified. We think the most divine spirit, the sum of all of the divinities, should be all-powerful. And this child says to me, I am all-powerful. I am unconditional love. And I saw that I thought powerful meant the power to make people do or not do things that were terrible. I wanted the love to be conditional. I wanted other people's freedom to be conditional. I wanted God to take responsibility for the power that is in fact in our hands. My center is connected to the Creator center. My void is the single breath that separates my will from the will of the rest of creation. The Creator's center, the center of all, is the realm into which initiation is offered here in Phase 6, so we'll be discussing it in great depth as the phase progresses. This will be our first initiation into an outer realm, although, as we've just learned, the way out, in this case, is to go in. Now, it's kind of meta, but this whole my heart is connected to the Creator's heart thing probably isn't even that hard to believe. It's a common sort of super spiritual thing to say. But how does that fit with what we learned about our magical center not necessarily being in the heart? About how it can be anywhere our conscious presence engages with the intersection of our manifest and unmanifest self. Does that mean we can connect to the Creator through our hands, our toenails, our left kidney? Yes, it does. And since you're not the only spirit with a center and a void, it means you can connect to the seat of creation through anyone's center, anything's center, any being's center, you know, with consent. Nicholas of Cusa, 15th century German philosopher and humanist, said it so eloquently. God is an infinite circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. The gateway of fire is everywhere. Which brings us to our third and final reason for entering the void. We said it's the cauldron of potential, it's the gateway of fire, and lastly, it's disturbingly peaceful. So many folks imagine the void as a state of no mind, a place with no thoughts, no internal chatter, but we haven't been centering in our head. For our workings thus far, we've practiced centering into a single point in the heart. So for our workings, the void will feel like no heart instead of no mind. Before we consider what an empty heart might feel like, let's think about what a full heart feels like. Well, the heart circulates our blood, the heart flutters. When we're in love, we imagine the heart is soulful, emotional. If we're outwardly expressive of our love, we say that we wear our heart on our sleeve. When we're grateful, our heart is overflowing. In grief, we say, my heart is heavy. In tragedy, my heart is broken. We believe a heart can be true. We make a pledge with cross my heart and hope to die. Even outside of spirit work, the heart is something most of us relate with in a multidimensional way, which is part of what makes it so easy to center there. We already think of the heart as mutable, physical, and symbolic, an intersection of manifest and unmanifest spirit and soul. So taking all of this into account, what would a void inside the heart feel like? In the physical realm, our heart organ would keep beating. thankfully, but we would become aware of the threshold between the physical substance of the heart and the hidden world of the heart. And upon that threshold, that intersection, that magical center, our consciousness would attune to the space between our heartbeats. Our passions would cease to pull us. Our emotions would grow still like undisturbed water. Our solid, loyal sense of truth would become soft, illusory. Our grief and brokenness would lift, rising from us like smoke. If our work was to enter the void and sit there for as long as we can manage for the sake of drinking in peace, then it might not really matter where we center and which void we enter. We'd probably pick whichever part of ourselves felt most restless, most in need of the medicine of peace. For many of us, that'd be our mind. But for spirit work, we want to be able to navigate within the void. We want to be able to do work in the cauldron of the void, to open the doors to other realms that are hidden in the void, and to return from the void by our will. Since we want to be able to navigate, we need to think carefully about what aspect of ourselves will be going quiet. If we center in our head and enter the void there, our thoughts will go quiet and we won't be able to use them to navigate. We'll have to consciously follow our heart or our gut instead. If we center in our heart and enter the void there, we won't have our aliveness and passion by which to navigate, so we'll have to follow something else like our head or our hands. Most of us have a great deal more experience navigating by thoughts than by the gut, so for most folks, that's the way to go for spirit work, at least when we're first learning. Plus, for this course, it means I can offer guided, word-based journeys without it disrupting your experience of the void. Now that said, even if we enter the void in the heart so that we can navigate with our head, that doesn't mean the head won't be influenced by the intoxicating peace. Remember that our center is the seat of manifestation, so what happens in the center can manifest, meaning it can influence the physical realm. If our working crossroads have been extended out across our whole body, then our whole body will be influenced to some degree by the void's unique flavor of peace. If we extend our crossroads across the whole living room, then all the spirits in that area may be touched by voidliness. In this state, we may still be able to navigate by thought, but it will be more challenging. Words may feel heavy and difficult to pull to the surface. On the other hand, our mind may feel clearer, and the words we do pull more impactful. In the beginning of our void practice, we'll keep our crossroads nice and small, just across our heart. Then, as you feel ready, you can extend the crossroads a bit further and see what feels sustainable and functional for you. That said, we don't have to enter the void with the intent of using the cauldron of potential or entering the gateway of fire. Creation and contact with the Creator, it's not our only purpose as humans. Wombs, spaces, openings, and quiet places are not only valuable when they're fertile, when they're productive, when they're a bridge to something else. The disturbing peace of the void is worthwhile as its own destination. In fact, the reason most of us become interested in the kinds of meditation that bring us into contact with the void is because we just want to taste peace. We want to experience a kind of peace we haven't known since we were in the womb, our whole self emerging for the first time from our mother's void. Instead of a Zen koan about one hand clapping, how about a Ren koan? What is the sound of no fiend barking? If you feel the call of peace, ask yourself with compassion and caution, what would it serve? Remember, one of the five pillars was desire to live greater than desire to check out. You may have seen an older person who's checked out. The eyes seem to have no fire in them. They're in soul flight, hands and feet cold, breath slow, their very presence elsewhere. They're in spirit flight, identifying with some other place and time. Pain, whether physical or mental, is a trance ingredient. If you had a practice that granted you peace, would you use it to grow your capacity for love, to deepen your relationship with life? Or would you use it to get high and avoid discomfort? What might a peace that isn't about escape look like? Well, imagine the peace of the hallowed elder sitting by the fire, looking at you patiently as you tell your story, a twinkle in their eye. They're willing to hear your cries, knowing your words won't bind them, at least not for long. They're willing to hear the cries of the whole world, knowing their empathy won't crush them. Rather, it lifts them up like the swell of the orchestra moving through a melancholy minor key. They do what they can, and it is enough. Enough is a compound word with two roots, from ge, Old English for with or together, and Proto-Indo-European nach, meaning to reach, to lift, or to attain. The hallowed elder embodies a peace that comes from joining with the troubles of the world and lifting them up, from knowing that just connecting and supporting matters. The hallowed elder finds peace not in false control or expectations, but in potential. I stare at my divine elder self and wonder, I'm a mess. How can they be so put together, so whole? What's their secret? They smile and whisper, the secret's in the center.